Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program. I'm Pastor Daniel Day, your host. And right now, I am joined with leadership expert Scott Wilson. Pastor Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so pumped to be here, Daniel. This is going to be awesome. Thanks for letting me come on.
Yes, sir. Listen, what we do around here with this podcast is we always start out every conversation with prayer. Would you please do me the honor of opening us up and taking us to the Lord in prayer?
Let's do it. That's good. God, I thank you so much that you are God who promises to be with us, to empower us, to gift us. You never call us to do anything that you don't give us the grace to do it, that you don't give us the gifts to do it. And I thank you, Lord, for everybody who is part of this podcast family right now, God, that you would bless them and grace them and encourage them right now, that you are with them and for them. And as we talk today, I pray that you help us to increase the impact that we can make for your kingdom as we just walk in alignment with your will and your direction. We trust in you. Bless everybody who's listening. Amen.
Amen. Pastor Scott, I just read your new book, Impact, Releasing the Power of Influence. First of all, congratulations on your latest book.
Ah, thanks. Thank you.
It was a great read. It was an easy read. It was an incredibly practical read. It was a challenging book. I sat down over the course of 2 days and finished it. I underlined, I wrote notes, and quite honestly, I could not wait to speak with you about this book. How does it feel to get one done again?
Well, I love this book. It's one of my favorites that I've written. And that's probably good since every, you know, each one I can probably say, hey, this is my favorite one, you know, because you want it to be everyone is your favorite. This one I really love because I think it's really going to make a difference in people's lives who are wanting to increase their influence and increase their impact in people's lives for good and for things that have eternal value. So I'm pretty pumped about it. I'm very happy with what's happening and how God's using it in people's lives.
Yes. And I just want to say to those watching right now, you're going to want to watch all the way to the end, because Pastor Scott has a very exciting blessing that he wants to give to those who watch this podcast or listen to this podcast to the very end. So don't go anywhere. Pastor Scott, what I want to do as we go through our interview today, what I like to do when I interview authors, especially the books that I've read, what I'll do is I'll simply read out a few of my favorite portions or a few quotes, and then just get your reflection on it and get your, you know, your input on it. And what I'd like to begin with tonight is the idea of respect and how that feeds our relationships. And so on pages 33 and 34, here are a couple of lines that really stood out to me, and then I'd love to get your response. You write on page 33 that relationships are built as trust is earned, and both take time. On page 34, you write, respect and relationship are the two wings of the leadership airplane. Without both of them, we crash and burn. Give us a few key insights on building trust.
Yeah, so, you know, I've read a lot of John Maxwell. He's my dear friend. He's a great guy. And one of the things he's made famous is saying that leadership is influence. But every time I've thought about leadership as influence, I'm going, well, what is influence? And so that's where it got me into what you just talked about, that influence is really about respect and relationship. It's the two wings of the plane. I mean, if you lose one of the wings, you're crashing. And so respect is so key for me to be a leader, that somebody respects me, but it's so key that they know that I like them and they like me. So like, think about it. If I respect somebody, but I don't like them, then I might say, yes, sir, I'll follow you for a while until I find somebody that I think likes me and I respect them and we have a relationship, then I'm going to go with them. If it's the opposite, if I got somebody who's my friend, but I don't respect them, then I'll go, hey, we'll be friends, but I don't want you to be my leader. You don't know what you're doing. So you got to have both. So when we're talking here about respect, the good news and the bad news is this: respect can be earned. and relationship can be built. The good news of that is no matter who I'm with right now, and I feel like, God, I wish I was closer to them, or man, I wish they thought more of me as a leader, you know, like a board member or staff member or people in the church or people in the community or people at your job, whatever it is. The good news is that respect, it doesn't have to stay the way it is. It can grow. It can get better. Your relationship can get stronger, but it's going to take time. And so I define in the book, it gets really practical. Let me just put it this way, Daniel. I don't see myself as a real natural born leader, somebody that just all comes natural to. One of the greatest gifts and strengths God's given me is to codify things. That means I'm not gifted at it. So I have to get systems to know how to do it well. So I've gotten really good at some things because I've gotten systems. The great thing about that is I can actually teach other people to know how to do it as well. So in the book, I talk about how respect can be broken down into character and competency. That means I call it the mechanic principle. If I'm asking Daniel, hey, you got a good mechanic? I'm asking really, do you know somebody who knows how to fix my car, and are they going to cheat me or not cheat me? Will they be honest? And that's the same thing everybody's asking about our leadership. So it's character and competency that causes me to respect someone because I see they really have a good heart and they really are smart and know what they're doing. And then on the relationship side, it's about time and trust. And the reason why it's time and trust is because there's some people I've spent time with that the more time I spent with them, the less I trust them, not the more. And so that's why it's very important that as I spend time with people, they can trust me more. They know I have I love them with no strings attached. I really care about them. And so what happens here in this is that I talk about it in the book is that it takes time and we've got to be patient and be consistent and just be faithful and just do what we're supposed to do, you know, and then that allows us to build that respect and to build that relationship. But the thing is, here's the bad side. The bad news is it doesn't just happen. It takes intentionality. We have to be purposeful in knowing how to do it. And that's the whole rest of the book is about, all right, let me help you to know the five ways to build your respect and five ways to build relationship.
No, that's so good. And I would love for you to just drill a little deeper into that thought of time, because you could just sit in the same room together and be together, but it's not mm-hmm. intentional, as you just said. And so what would you say to a leader who is impatient and they want this overnight, almost demanding respect, almost demanding loyalty or demanding trust when they haven't put in the time? What would you say to them?
Well, it's very unrealistic. I mean, to look at somebody and say, hey, I got the title, I got the position, do what I say. Man, that's not going to work with winners. It might work with some whiners. So you'll keep the whiners and lose the winners because people need to know that you care about them. People need to know that they can trust you. I don't trust people overnight. I trust people over time. I don't just walk in and say, man, I know I can trust that person. I just met them. No, one of the things that can happen is I can borrow influence. So let's say, Daniel, you and I are friends and you've got somebody that you're talking to and they trust you, but they just now met me. One of the ways that I can get trust or get respect from them is I borrow the influence you have with them until I can get my own. So one of the ways that I can do that is when you tell somebody, God, you're going to love Scott, man. He's a good guy. He's a good friend. I've known him for 15 years. You know, you can trust him. He's been consistent like this. So I'll get to borrow your influence until I can build my own. But anytime I've ever stepped into the lane of being impatient with people, it's never worked well for me. And so I don't think it's even that we have an option. If you start trying to tell people, do you know who I am? I'm the pastor or I'm the leader. Listen, if you have to tell somebody what you are, you're not. You know, and so that's where I think you've just got to say, hey, man, listen, let's just walk together. How can I? And so how do you do that? To me, you do what you say, you do it well, you're consistent and you do it on time and you love people no matter what. And as you do those things over time, it's going to be built in that relationship and in that respect. I don't know what else to say, but the other doesn't work.
No, that's so good. Someone once told me when a lion walks in the room, he doesn't have to tell anyone that he's a lion.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
Well said. I'd love to kind of transition this thought process of building trust and winning people into your corner and being able to influence them by talking about what you call on page 70, the principle of cascading communication. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to tell us a little bit about why cascading communication. Well, first of all, what is it? And secondly, why is it so vital to the process of continuing on this journey of building trust and relationships?
Yeah, you know, it seems that this may be one of the biggest areas of the pastors that I work with that people kind of tell me, man, I don't understand. My board or my staff or my leaders, they're not with me. They don't respect me. They're not walking with me, you know, and I'll ask them, well, tell me kind of what you're talking about. Well, I was trying to lead this thing and then people just get mad. And I said, well, what did your leaders say? Well, they're the ones who were mad. And I'm going, well, why? They were mad. Like, why didn't you tell us this ahead of time? I said, oh my gosh, you mean you tried to lead a change from the platform and an announcement without talking it through with your leaders first? Man, that's not going to work. And they said, well, why not? I'm the leader. God told me I'm going to do this. Well, cascading communication means that you don't surprise those in influence. You don't surprise leaders. You share with them up front so they can know first, but secondly, so they can help you in leading the process. And thirdly, so they can give feedback to you so that you might, there might be some blind spots that you don't see that they're going to be able to help you with, but they can gain that. So in other words, when we, let's say I get up on a Sunday and I tell everybody, guys, I'm telling you, we've outgrown all these Sunday school classrooms here. You know, I'm going old school, but this really happened with me. So I remember this. And we got to go to small groups in homes. And so in 2 weeks, we're going to do that. Listen, everybody in the room's looking to their Sunday school teacher to see if they're going like this or if they're going like this. And everybody, right when the service is over, they're going to their Sunday school teacher to say, do you know about this? Did you know? And I know this. Every influencer I have in my church has a bucket of water and a bucket of gasoline. And every time there's a fire, they can either put it out or blow it up. And so if they go to those people and I haven't talked to those Sunday school teachers, I haven't processed with them, then people are going to come up. They're going to go, well, I'll tell you what, right now, I used to be in and on the know of everything going on around here. But for some reason, I guess Pastor Scott thinks he's just going to do this without, but I'll tell you what, I'll get to the bottom of this and I'll let you know. That's how we're going to fix this right now. They'll talk like that. And those people are all upset. And then I can get mad like, well, why did you say that? Why did you do that? Well, it's my fault because I did not cascade communication. And cascading is, think about water coming down rocks. And as it's coming down, you know, like that, it just keeps coming down and it builds up steam and it's built up momentum. What does this mean? I need to know who the major influencers are in my church or in my organization. And I need to talk to the most influential first, or not just influential, those who are going to be most impacted by what I'm about to make a decision on. And I need to get them to talk it through with me, come in agreement with me, so that when I go to the next level, I'm not only coming with my influence, but their influence is now cascaded with me. It's now building up with me. So even if I go to the board, I don't ever go to a board meeting and just blurt out a big issue that I want to lead through. I go, if I've got a legal issue, I go to my lawyer first that's on the board and I get him bought in. If I've got to make a budget decision, I go to my treasurer and I make sure everything's already worked out in the budget before I go in and that they're backing me on it. And I'll talk to the key influencers. You know, so whoever is most impacted has the most wisdom in that area or influence in that area, and who's the most influential. And then what I'll do if I have to, Daniel, I'll go like this. I'll go to the accountant on our or the treasurer and I'll say, hey, here's what I want to do. It's a $50,000 change. Here's how I think we can do it. What do you think? Can you help me? Okay. Do you feel good on this? You feel good? Hey, I'm going to go talk to Bob, who's one of the other influential board members. Can I tell him I've already worked this out with you and it's all good? Yeah. So then I'll go to Bob, say, hey, Bob, I've already talked to Steve, you know, our accountant and the financial guy, the treasurer on the board. He says, we're good. We're good on it. This is what I want to do. What do you think? Okay. Hey, when we go to board meeting, could you guys be the first ones to comment on this and to help me to move this forward? And then I might even talk to some of the others or not. But the point is I use Steve's influence as the finance guy that everybody trusts with with Bob. Now Bob joins with his influence with me, saying, hey, he's with me. Now I come in with the two biggest influencers, the one who's responsible for that and knows the most about it, and the one who's most influential overall. Their influence joins mine as I'm leading that forward. I find a lot of times we're skipping steps, and because we skip steps, we're actually causing problems for ourselves. And then we get sit there and go, why are these people not with me? Well, it may be because you're just skipping steps and not communicating.
And goes back to the principle of time, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So good. I want to move on. You mentioned five reasons on page 121. Why key influencers in your organization may lose respect for you. Mm. And some might call, you don't say this in the book, but some call this the message before the message in a church setting.
Okay.
I've got a great message prepared. I've studied all week, and it's gospel centered. It's Christ exalting. It's filled with the Holy Spirit, and I'm going to preach it with all my heart. But before I get to preach, they've already heard 500 messages from the moment they drove onto the parking lot. They've seen the landscaping. They've seen the condition of the parking lot. They've seen the signage. They've noticed the greeters. Were they weird? Is there any signage pointing to the bathroom? You know, the cleanliness of the property. You list these things are very interesting. And really, when I read through them, the word I kind of hear in my mind is excellence. You're really wanting things to be done with excellence because it's really being done for the Lord. And so the messages that people hear before the message are very important. Here's a few of the things you list. I thought it was interesting that you wrote down the dirty car. I have two little kids, and wow, is it hard to keep my car clean? So I felt like that one, I was like coming under the conviction of God with that one. Broken things or things are not fixed in a timely manner. Sounds and smells are unpleasant. The lawn or landscaping is a mess. Things are not clean, especially the bathrooms. In a church setting, you might even add the nursery or the kids sections and so forth, bad signage and so on and so forth. Would you please take a few moments and talk to us about why these things will cause key leaders or potential key leaders to lose respect for us?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down not just even church, in any organization and anything, people have expectations. So people have an expectation. The bigger the bigger the organization, the bigger the church, the more established. Like Daniel, your church is 60 years old, and it's not a startup. It didn't just start. And sometimes when people have a startup and they're in a school, people have cut them slack because their expectations are low. These guys just started, they're leasing this place. They don't get to own it and really do it. So their expectations are low. Or, hey, they just started, so probably they had to get, you know, a couple of guys who can play guitar to lead worship and do that. But as you get established, as you grow, as you get bigger, expectations get higher. Now, if expectation is here, I'm just doing it with my arm like this, but reality is down here. So like they're expecting for music to actually be good and for the message to be good and for everything to be clean and everything to be ready, because they think this church should have that, you know, but reality is down here that it really is this way, less than, then the distance between those two lines is called frustration. People get frustrated when they think, man, they should have these bathrooms clean. Wow, this stall door has been broken now. I've come 3 weeks and it's been broken all 3 weeks. When you don't fix your problems, you leak credibility. So I remember this happening to me one time when I was passing a water fountain in our church that said out of order on it. And I thought, oh, that could have happened yesterday. The next week, it still had out of order on it. And I told one of my assistants, I said, hey, you get the people maintenance, get that fixed this week. It better be fixed this week. And they asked me later, said, why were you so fired up about that? There's other water fountains people can go to, and you know, it's okay. And I said, it's not okay. We're trying to raise $20 million to build a new auditorium. And do you think people are motivated and trust us to give to at a higher level when we can't even take care of the building we got now? We're leaking it, not just a water fountain, we're leaking credibility. And so that's huge on the meeting and exceeding expectations. So one of the things I talk about in the book that we think of is, I don't want to just meet expectations, which is good. Like, okay, the people can sing okay. Okay, they preach okay. Okay, the bathroom's clean. I want to flip it and now not only meet it, but exceed their expectations. That's how you grow and earn respect, when you exceed it. So one of my favorite illustrations on that is our bathrooms at Oaks Church, is that when people come in, Mother's Day was just a few weeks ago, you know, from the recording we're doing now. And in Mother's Day, not only is the men's bathroom clean, not only do they have in there every week mouthwash, they've got shoe shine and stuff in there. They got hair stuff, hairspray, all kinds of stuff in there for guys, right? Deodorant, cologne, all that. But guess what they had on Mother's Day? They had cards in there that said to the side, a little sign that said, "In case you forgot," and they were Mother's Day cards. Guys were coming out going, "I love this church, man. This church is awesome." You know, and because what happened? They never even thought about going to the bathroom and being able to pick up the card for mom, you know, for their wife. Oh my gosh, that wasn't just meeting expectation, clean bathroom. But there's all that stuff in there to help them with their cologne, their smell, all of that. And then a Mother's Day card as well. And so when we're thinking about respect, if we're thinking about meeting expectations, that's maintaining the respect you have. If we want to earn some more, we've got to do things that go beyond. That means it's better than what they thought it would be. It happened earlier than they thought it would happen. We saved money in a place they thought we wouldn't save money. I mean, these are ways. You do something before, you do something better, you do something that's not just what it was, it's more than that. These are ways that we can earn respect. And I think the whole thing you're saying about the message before, the message is huge. Because if I get up and talk about God's love, but everybody was mean and ignored people, they're going like, there's dissonance in what you're saying because of what I'm experiencing.
Yeah, so good. Why don't we shift gears and kind of make it more personal for the leaders watching, and just talk about personal growth and development if we could.
Sure.
On page 102, you write about the importance of developing a personal growth plan, and I'd love to quote something from the book and then get your reflection on it. Here's what you write. Most leaders have good intentions about growing and learning. Mm-hmm. They tell you they're committed to their development in all these areas, but very few can point to an actual plan, a written plan. The hard truth is that no one grows because of good intentions. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think most leaders would say, yeah, I'm growing. And what they mean by that is, I think I'm growing because I just woke up today and I have more experiences. But people don't grow by experience. They grow by examined experience. They grow by learning from the experiences they have. So there's even people sometimes have said to me, man, I don't know why people don't respect me around here. I've got 25 years experience in ministry. And after I get to know them about 5 minutes, I realize they got about 1 year experience. They've done 25 times over. You know, they don't have 25 years experience. They've been doing the same thing they were doing 25 years ago. And so the point about growth, it doesn't happen just because you've experienced things. It happens because you've learned new thoughts that you've now applied in new ways. And you're doing things differently than how you did before. You're growing. You're thinking differently. And the only way that happens is if there's intentionality. I love how John Maxwell, he talks about how all things worthwhile are uphill, and he'll put his hand like this, like, you know, it's going uphill. All things that of great value and are worthwhile are uphill. He said, the bad thing about it is you can't go uphill with bad hill or downhill habits. You can't go uphill with downhill habits. And so I can say, I'm a person of growth, man. I'm very disciplined or focused on my personal growth and getting better. But really, better only happens when we get intentional. So I talk about in the book how to put a growth plan together. And that is, you determine what are the roles of your life. For me, I have my personal roles, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, financial. I have my family roles, which is to be a dad, a granddad in 3 weeks. Come on, that's awesome. And to be a great husband. I'm a writer, I'm a communicator, I'm a leader. These are the 5 roles of my life that I want to grow in. And each one of those, I've defined what it looks like to be at the highest level of what that looks like, to be winning in those areas. And so then I look at it and I say, okay, what are the areas right now I'm not winning at the nth degree I want to be? And so what are my goals in each one of those areas? And what are the two that I'm not hitting like I want to, that I want to take to the next level? So every quarter I'll pick two of those that I'm going to focus in on. And I'll make those goals. And then I make a plan in my schedule to grow in those areas. So if I want to read 52 books a year, once a week, and in the next month, that means I'm going to read four, you know, books if I'm going to stay on schedule like that. And so then what does that mean for this week of what I need to read or something like this? So whatever it is, you're putting together your roles with your goals, and then it gets into your schedule. But let me tell you something, if you want to really see that happen in growth, what I find is most people who grow don't just have a plan, they have a growth team. That means they've got people, and when I ask people, hey, Daniel, you got a team? A lot of times go, oh yeah, I got a team. I got a youth pastor, kids pastor. I got that. No, I'm talking about your team. Do you have a counselor that's helping you in your emotional and mental health and being a better dad and a better husband? I have that for the last 25 years. I've been going to counseling every other week for 2 hours. Jenny and I, my wife and I, go for an hour, and then I'll stay another hour. So the counselor tells me all the stuff I was missing the first hour and helps me to grow. And I do that consistently because I don't think of a counselor as crisis management. I think of just crisis management, because they certainly are that. But I look to him as probably one of my top growth team members. I have a prayer team. I have mentors and consultants in different areas of those five areas. So I have a growth team that fits my growth plan that helps me to be consistent, because they're further down the road than me in those areas, to keep growing. And so anytime somebody says, yeah, I'm dedicated to growth, I say, well, tell me about your plan. Because I don't know anybody who's growing unless they're intentional about it.
No, that's so good. And just a follow up to that, I know that's not on our agenda, but it came to my mind as you were speaking that the people on your plan, on your growth team, the people, like you mentioned, a counselor, and I would imagine in your book, you talk about going to CrossFit and so forth. So you have coaches at your CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
In my own life, I've had coaches, for example, at the gym that weren't necessarily Christians, but they were on my team. They were my superiors as it relates to my physicality. And
right.
And so you could have non-Christians in your life that are helping you to grow in a non-spiritual way. So I might have a coach at the gym. He's not a Christian, but he's in my life and we've made friends and I can witness to him and I can learn things from him. So can you just maybe unpack the idea of some people on your team might be strategic in the way of building relationships and helping them to come to Christ? And some people, like if you're doing counseling, I would imagine that person's probably a believer. Right. If you're doing mentorship and consulting for your church, that person's probably a believer. But there might be other areas of your life where a non-believer could even give you input. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I think that is 100% on. I appreciate you bringing that up. I'll tell you what, even to take that further, I don't think just because I have a coach in one area that I'm trying to emulate their life in every area of their life. It's that, like you just said, if I have a CrossFit coach, I'm not needing them to help me to know how to be a better dad. They may be a deadbeat dad, but I'm not getting them to speak into my life on that. In fact, what I used to think is if I'm going to have somebody who's going to be a mentor to me, they need to be everything I want to be in every area. And yet you're not going to be able to find those people. What you do is you get a consultant or a mentor in the area they excel in and only have them speaking into that area that you're needing it there. I don't need them in all five areas. I just need them in this one area. So I define the boundaries or the focus of what that relationship is. In fact, I have people in my life on purpose because they're not a believer. They help me to think in a way that I know how to lead or I know how to reach what I call the one, you know, like the sheep, the lost sheep. The one is, I don't want to just think my whole life and be surrounded by the 99. Come on. I want to be surrounded with some ones, just like Jesus did, eating with sinners and tax collectors. I mean, Absolutely. I'm learning from people like that all the time. Now, I don't have a non-believer helping me in my theology, but I definitely can help them have an unbeliever help me in my finances. And maybe if they're really good at that and down the road, I might be able to have them help me even in how I do organization and business leadership. They may be able to help me in so many areas, but one of the things they're going to help me in is they're going to help me to be sensitive to not live in my Christian bubble and think that that's what God meant for me to be. He wants me to be salt and light, and he wants me to be with people and to be tender in my heart. So one of the ways that they're helping me and mentoring me is helping me to just be tender in my heart and to understand what's even going on in the world, because I don't want to be oblivious to what life is like in the world because I've been living in a Christian bubble for so long.
The most important question of the day, your least favorite CrossFit workout.
My least favorite. Well, there's about five of them I can't even do. So, I mean, I can't do a muscle up, you know, and I can't do, let me see what else. I can do some pull-ups, but I can't do the muscle ups, and my chest to bars aren't great. And, you know, but dude, I like the overhead stuff pretty good. And I'm pretty good on the deadlifts and stuff like that. In fact, the guys in the CrossFit in the gym and the box, they'll always talk about, we know it's a lifting day. Wilson's here. If we were running or doing any of that, I say, I don't even look at what the workout is. I'm here when I'm here. If I'm out of town, you know, but they mock me.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we pastors deserve it.
That's okay. What they say.
Last question of the day. And I think it's a good way to wrap up. And by the way, I've just really appreciated your time. This has been a good conversation. Page 123, you write these words. I think they're so powerful. Love and leadership. Love and leadership are essential. You lose credibility when you don't address and fix the people problems. People are watching, and these leaders represent you. Their attitudes and performances are a direct reflection on you. Now, I appreciate the fact that you didn't say a reflection of you. I think that would have taken a different dynamic. You actually said it's a reflection on you. And it made me think of the old movie line from Remember the Titans: attitude reflect leadership, Captain. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about how we should be handling conflict, and maybe even get into timing, because it matters not only how we do conflict management, but the timing of when we tackle these issues. So please reflect on that.
Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about how different people. So part of the context of what I was talking about there is, say you got a lady who's running the nursery and she's really mean and like a dictator to everybody. And everybody's walking in there going, my gosh, what is going on with this lady, this pastor? What's he doing? I'm losing credibility because I'm not dealing with that person who may be mean or hateful that's on my team. And that's what you're saying by they're reflecting on me or on our church. Because it's in one of three ways. Number one, they're thinking, does he not know? Like, is he oblivious to what's going on? He's out of touch. Or number two, is this the kind of leader he wants in here to do this? Did he handpick her? Or number three, is he as scared of her as we all are? He don't want to talk to her. All three are causing me to lose respect of people. And it's causing not only me, but in our church, for the church and Jesus to look like, I mean, this is how the church is. This is how Jesus is, you know. So I think what it would be there is love and leadership is to go sit down with that lady and to say, hey, let's talk. What's going on? Maybe there's something going on in her marriage. Maybe there's something going on in her life that is making her hurt. She's hurting. And you need to talk about that. Maybe it is if I went and talked to her and we sat down and had the conversation, maybe that's how her whole life, the nursery director was. And that's the only modeling she's ever had. So she thinks that's how you run a real tight ship and how you handle it. And the only leadership modeling she's had, and she just needs some teaching and a new model. Or maybe it is she's just defiant and you're going to have to make some moves and some changes. But whatever it is, the important thing would be that Matthew 18:15, that I would go to her instead of talking to everybody else, says, my gosh, who's going to go talk to her? What's going on here? And I get a coalition of, man, I don't like her. She's mean, you know, No, go talk to her and start with questions, not with accusations, not with, hey, you are a terrible person, as much as, hey, can you talk to me about what's going on? How are you? How are things going? Tell me, how do you see things going? Hey, talk to me about, you know, how you're leading in this way and how you want to be talked to and how we should talk to the people. I mean, you just start asking the questions and pretty soon you're going to start getting an understanding of what's going on there.
Yeah.
I think love and leadership, it's the same thing that John writes in the gospel account there in his first chapter, saying Jesus came full of what? Full of grace, but also full of truth. And so I think that's where it's very important, is that if we're not having those tough conversations, people start going, guy, he's not very good as a leader. If we just start cutting throats and just kicking people out, then they go, God, he's not full of love. What? Why? He ain't loving. Okay. So to me, leadership is having the conversation. Love is, I'm going to talk to them and minister to where they're at and help them to get where they need to go. And I'm going to give them the grace and the time to get there and feedback of knowing how to do it, which may, Pastor Daniel, you know what that may do? That may not just save what's going on in the nursery. That may save her marriage. That may save her relationship with her kids. That may even save her career, because somebody loved her enough to talk to her. And so that's what we're talking about there.
Right. No, that's so good. I tell you, any number of ministry scenarios come to my mind as you're talking. And I've just come to learn that if someone's acting that way, it's almost never, ever the root. It's always the fruit of pain or confusion or mistreatment of some kind, and having enough love and grace and time to speak with them and try to understand where they're coming from is absolutely paramount. Would you just take one more moment? And I love asking leaders this question, especially while we're on the subject, the issue of timing as it relates to conflict management. When I was a younger leader, I didn't want there to be any time between the moment I learned of a situation that required conflict and I wanted to call that person or text that person and say, hey, we need to meet up, and we need to meet up now. You know, using the scripture out of context of don't let the sun go down on your anger, meaning, you know, if you take that out of context, you think you gotta do conflict right now. You just gotta address it right now. And sometimes you're just not in the right frame of mind. You're not thinking of that person in a loving way. And, you know, it's just not a good thing to jump the gun and maybe have the conflict or the conversation too soon. Would you just talk about that for a moment and help us to understand timing?
Sure. I think even the concept of the not letting the sun go down on your anger is talking about don't put it off. Don't keep delaying. Don't keep letting it fester. Those type of things. I think there is a time to say right now. One of the things that we do is honesty policy. And honesty policy says this: I will speak the truth in love. And who I'm, let me just back up. This, I ask all of our staff, all our board, all of our key leaders to sign this document that we call the honesty policy every year at the first meeting of every year, and saying we are going to covenant with each other to keep this in relationship to each other all year. And it says this: I will speak the truth in love to the last 10%. To the right person at the right time in the right way. And we will have zero tolerance on gossip. So what that says is at the end of every board meeting and staff meeting, they're signing that. And so what I'll do is I'll say, so if it was you and me, Daniel, I'd say, hey, Daniel, thank you for serving on our board. Thank you for everything you do. Jesus said the gates of hell will not prevail against us. So as long as we keep our hearts right with him, and as long as we keep our hearts right with each other, the devil has no place. It's inevitable. He will be defeated and we will advance the cause of Christ. So I want to make sure everything's good. Daniel, I'm going to just look in your eyes right here and I'll put my fingers like this to somebody's eyes and I'll go, can you just, anything you need to talk about, anything that's in your heart, anything we said tonight, anything bothering you, any question you have, anything good, bad, and different you need to say. And I'll do it that way. Because what am I doing? In that meeting, I want there to be, before we walk out the door, everything clean and everything dealt with. So whether they have a problem with somebody else or what they said or something that happened, whatever, we'll deal with it. And so in a sense, those are the times where you say, don't let the sun go down in your anger. Why? Because every board meeting I have and staff meeting I have, I want it to be what's going on in that meeting is what we're really talking about. When we have meetings, sometimes what the issue is this big, but the reaction emotionally of people is this big. Why? Because they're bringing in the baggage from prior meetings. Like, dude, I can't handle it anymore. This is the fifth meeting this has happened. Okay, like that. Well, why didn't we talk about it, those other meetings? It's blown up here now. And so in that sense, I think right away. There's sometimes with people that I'm too angry in that moment or upset in that moment. They're too angry or upset in a moment. Or it's just proximity. They're out of town this week. And so I'm not going to go, well, then we're Zooming right now. Or whatever. I'm no, it needs to be that I'm letting them know I love you. I care about you. I think it's important we talk. When would be a good time? Let's get together and we'll try to schedule that time. I try to do Matthew 18:15, where I'll meet with them one-on-one. If it is something that I feel, if it's an opposite sex, my wife would be there or one of the female elders or something like that. Or a staff member, or it could be that if I feel like, hey, this is one I probably need somebody in with me to just not say anything, but to just hear what's being said and done, just to, as a protection to us, we'll do that. But I try to have that meeting in the right time. Now, here's how I think the timing comes in that's important. I think of any time it's an idea, a conflict, something that I'm needing to talk to somebody about, I think of that as seed. Seed that I want to grow of truth and of relationship. Seed cannot turn into a harvest unless it's sown in good soil and in a good season. That means that my relationship with them is solid enough that that soil can receive what I'm saying. And the season is that the timing's right. I'm not in the hallway. I'm not where everybody else is around. I'm not in a time where I'm saying you're meeting with me right now, you know, demanding things, but the timing is right. If somebody is, it just had somebody die in their family, that's probably not the time to talk about, hey, you're mean in the nursery. You know, if somebody has their husband in the hospital, if somebody just had, they're sick at home, I say, I don't care. You did something Sunday. We're meeting right now. So season is important, but so is the soil. And what I mean by the soil is, I always try no matter what conversation I'm having with somebody, is to understand I value you as a person. You are so important to me and so important to Jesus. I value you. There's something we need to talk about. Could me and you talk about this issue as if the issue is something we're dealing with, not that we're dealing with each other. I'm not dealing with you. I'm dealing with this issue or this problem or this thing coming up. Can we get on team together to handle how this could be fixed or done better?
Yeah. All of these issues and opportunities that we've spoken about today come directly out of your book, Impact: Releasing the Power of Influence. Pastor Scott, this has been a tremendously wonderful time. I'm honored that you've been able to give us some insight into these key pieces. And again, these are just some of my favorite portions of the book. This is certainly not an exhaustive treatment of what you wrote, but just my favorite portions. I get to do that as the host of the show. And you have by far exceeded all expectations, and we're just really grateful.
Well, you know what? I want to exceed it even more because I want to give the book for free to everybody who's watching right now. And anybody that's watching right now, you can get it by going to Scott Wilson Leaders, that's with an S, scottwilsonleaders.com. And if you go there, it's a $20 book. We're going to send it to your home for free. It's my gift to you because you're part of this family here. And we're going to give it to you, but all you got to do is pay for the shipping. I think it's $6.99, something like that. If you'll just put your address in, we'll ship it to you. And you just fill it out there. And I think it's $6.99 for the shipping if you'll help us on that. And then listen, if you want to get the masterclass with it, where I go down the line on each chapter and do it like a video like this, where I'm going each chapter one at a time, going through to help. Okay, how does this apply? How do you activate this? What do you do? Let me talk to you about what I was thinking when I wrote this, kind of like what we're doing right here on every single chapter. You can get that. That does have a cost to it, and you can get that. But there's one more thing I'm going to give everybody free. If you get the book and you go on there and have it sent, I'm automatically going to give everybody for free 30 days on our Ready, Set, Grow University platform. RSGU is something I started because, Daniel, people would come to me all the time and say, hey, is there any way you could mentor me? Is there any way you could coach me? Is there any way, you know, we're doing this spiritual fathering, you could be a father to me? And every time I want to say yes, but I can't do it with everybody in the same way. So one of the things I said, absolutely yes. Because every single month, yesterday, right here in this studio, I shot a brand new masterclass about spiritual maturity in leadership and the four levels of leadership. And no matter where you're at, how to go to the next level, that drops in just 3 weeks on the Ready, Set, Grow University. And so if you get it right now, you get the book, go to scottwilsonleaders.com. You can get the book for free, sent to your house, 30 days on Ready, Set, Grow University. There's already, I don't know, like 50 different courses that are on there right now on leadership, on family, on prayer, on your personal leadership. And you can get that for 30 days. Check it out. If you don't think it's worth it, then you can just unsubscribe. Just unsubscribe on there and not cost you anything. If you stay on after the 30 days, it'll automatically bring you onto the subscription. And we do webinars every twice a month for just the people who are on the Ready, Set, Grow University and talk about things. The next one we have coming up is about how to build your engagement pathway. That whole deal you said about the message before the message and how do you get people moving forward in the engagement pathway. So we want to do those type of deals to add value to everybody that we can. So scottwilsonleaders.com. We want to get all that to you.
Very cool. Pastor Scott, close us the way you began. Pray for us, brother.
Absolutely. God, I just thank you for everybody who's joined us on here. And I pray you help every one of us to become a loving, serving leader. You said if we're going to be the greatest, we're going to be the servant of all. Help every single one of us to love people the way you love them, to care for people the way you care for them, and to speak to people the way that you speak to them. God, I pray you help every single one of us grow and our impact by growing in the way we relate to people and growing in the way that we treat them and earn respect. God, I thank you for Daniel. Thank you for this podcast, his family. I pray you bless them in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Friends, the book is Impact, Releasing the Power of Influence. The author, Pastor Scott Wilson. Pastor Scott, thank you so much for your time.
It was an honor.